Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
All right, 7:12, hot, humid today. Over the time that I was on vacation, I was out in the heat for like 5-6 hours and just had that, for those of you that have been through it, football practice sweat, where you just, it's just pouring out of you. And Barry Irwin, Chief Policy Officer for Leaders for Better Louisiana, I don't mean to drag you into this, but have you ever gone through a thing where you think maybe you perspiration glands reset or something, or you break them? Because I'm still sweating, and I'm not hot, and I don't know what's going on. It's been a week now, and I think I need a new antiperspirant or something.
Oh, wow, that's weird. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. And if y'all can text me at 504-260-1870 if you've been through anything similar. But I'm talking about that you're out in the heat for 5 hours. You just sweat through everything. I remember I went to a graduation at Loyola one time. They had it in the horseshoe. Sean O'Keefe from NASA and later UNO was speaking. I sweated through my shoes. That's how hot it was. But let's get on with the business of Louisiana. Tell me about the economic gains that the state's experiencing, Barry.
Well, we just put out a new report, kind of looking at the second quarter. We do these things quarterly and try and do a little snapshot of where we are. And honestly, I think there's a lot of encouraging news in there, a lot of it very positive. But as always, I'd say positive with an asterisk. But I think the big headline on this is that for the first time, really, I think since about 2015, I believe it was, or 2014, we've got over the mark of 2 million jobs in the state. That has been sort of a goal for a long time, or a benchmark, that we wanted to have 2 million jobs, 2 million people employed in Louisiana. And we did for a brief time about 10 years ago, and then we sort of plateaued. Of course, with COVID, it went down. And we've been climbing back, but for the first time during this last quarter, we hit that mark, which is really a big deal to get back to that. You know, the other positive news, job growth, of course, also some population growth in some of our metro areas, particularly in the I-10 corridor. So good positive stuff going on there. Unemployment low. The asterisk about all this is that we're doing better by our own standards, but, you know, other parts of the South are really still kind of beating us at a lot of these games.
You know, as you say that, Barry, July 1st came and went, and I didn't even realize that that was the end of the second quarter already. So that got my attention when you said that. Secondly, I never did look at it before as the total number of jobs in Louisiana at 2 million. How does that compare? I don't know. Can you make a comparison to other southern states, or is it fair to say, you know, Mississippi has X, Louisiana has 2 million, Mississippi has X, Alabama has X, Georgia has X, or Texas even, because you got to factor in the size of the states and you have to do it proportionally as well or not?
Yeah, no, it's kind of hard to do the outright numbers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the problem is, I think when you look at percentages, though, the growth that we're seeing percentage-wise in these other states is greater. I mean, of course, Texas is out the window, Florida, North Carolina, Georgia. I mean, all of those are really leading the way in the region. I mean, I'll give you an example. If you took it at the whole southern region, you know, the average growth over that same period, this is basically year over year from last year, but is recorded in this latest quarter, was about 6.5%. I mean, for us, it was less than 1%. So we're seeing growth. The trends are good. The direction is the right direction. You know, even with population, even with, all these unemployment, we are in the right direction for everything we're doing. We're just not having the speed or the momentum that you were seeing in other states. And that still remains our challenge. And we've got to figure that out.
When you say 2 million jobs, and I don't mean to be stupid about this, how are you defining jobs? Does that include like minimum wage fast food stuff or what?
It's everything. I mean, basically they call it non-farm jobs, so it's really the whole gamut of things. But I think when you can look around and see, again, where we're doing the best in terms of our job growth, you're seeing a lot of things like healthcare, which is good, manufacturing, which is good, trade, transportation, those are truck driver jobs, those are high-paying jobs. You know, one of the areas I will say, however, where we still have a lot of growth and a lot of demand is retail. And, you know, of course, retail and hospitality, those types of things are not our highest paying jobs that are available. And I think that's part of the issue, too, that Louisiana faces is our job mix is different than what we're seeing in other places where they're seeing that job growth. I mean, we're seeing job growth in healthcare. That's good. It's happening everywhere. Those are good paying jobs. It takes some degree of education and training, but not way over the top. That's going to be around for a long time. But we don't have like the tech sector and some of those things that really drive job growth in some of these other states. And again, Florida, Texas, North Carolina, those places, Georgia that we compete against. And that's kind of the challenge. But I mean, I think on the good news front is we do see job growth in, you know, areas like manufacturing, healthcare that do have good wages, and hopefully that will continue.
So when it comes to, and I know this is a very general statement, but when it comes to, you know, if you're talking about 2 million jobs, retail, hospitality, can you really work in those industries or in certain positions in some of those industries without being working poor?
I think it's difficult for sure. It's gotten a little better than it has been, honestly, because we have seen wage growth in the state really since COVID, you know, higher median income in the state. We're still low compared to other states, but I think our median income in Louisiana, the last one I saw, I think just for a household or for just regular households was almost $60,000. That does not mean it's an average. It's just the median income. So that's a number that has been rising. But I mean, you're right. I mean, the job mix that we have is really not in tune with, I would say, a lot of growth in income and prosperity. We have those sectors, you know, again, healthcare, manufacturing, you know, some of the other types of jobs, maritime, and things that really do generate, you know, some good wages. But we're still kind of mired in this kind of retail economy or in the hospitality part that is slow. The thing that's killing us, I think, in a lot of ways, again, is that we don't have that tech sector the way other states do. We certainly have one. I mean, we have tech jobs, you know, in New Orleans, they're in Baton Rouge, they're in Lafayette. And those are good jobs, but they are just not at the level, the depth that we see in these other states. And the tech sector is this high-growing field, and that's where you see, you know, fast job growth.
And the only point I'm trying to make is that it is a puzzle, right? Life is a puzzle. Government is a puzzle. Population, citizenship, whatever, however you want to say it, civilization is a puzzle. And if you have people that are working poor, well, then if you cut Medicaid or you cut SNAP or whatever you cut on the other side of it, you could be hurting people that are doing everything they can, working for a living. They're just not making enough money. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, no, I think it is. And I think what we're going to see as we begin to see whatever these cuts are, and again, some of them are actually going to be postponed, so we don't know when all of them are going to hit. But that is going to have an impact in Louisiana. As you know very well, we are a net importer of federal dollars when it comes to basically social service programs, a lot of education dollars, all those things. We are a net importer to a large degree. And those dollars don't just sit static. They go back into the economy, especially ones that are used. Actually, all of them, really. I mean, the Medicaid dollars, those spin around in the healthcare sector. Obviously, the SNAP benefits go through the food and retail sector, or if you want to call it that, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. We're going to see the impact on that. It comes with the fact of being sort of a dependent economy on so much, you know, money from the federal government.
And you can only shove so much stuff into a tube. I always simplify it that way. I go with the plumbing analogy, Barry. And it's going to leak out somewhere, right? So if people don't get Medicaid and they don't get the care, then they're going to go to the emergency rooms, and the emergency rooms can't turn them down, which means they go to emergency rooms for simple things that perhaps Medicaid would have taken care of, and we wind up, you and me, who are not work in retail or whatever, that are above the, you know what I'm saying. We wind up paying for that with higher insurance. So you can only shove so much stuff in a tube. It's going to come out somewhere and spray all over somebody. Let's leave it at that. 721 traffic now, WWL. 7:26 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Barry Irwin, Chief Policy Officer, Leaders for a Better Louisiana. New data shows that Louisiana is above the 2 million job threshold for the first time in a while. And Barry, you mentioned the South, and I'm looking at the map here, and it just seems to me, if we're going to be honest, Louisiana is never going to be Florida. Louisiana is never going to be Texas, right? Or wrong?
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I think what we can look at are places like Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina. That's kind of where I think our aspirational level should go. Mm-hmm. It is kind of unfortunate being bookended by Texas.
Well, but you always hear that, right? You always hear when it comes to tax reform, this, that, the other thing. You always hear Texas. You always hear Florida. And I always think, okay, that's great, but you're talking apples and oranges. Louisiana is never going to be either one of those.
No, I agree with you. And it's hard to make those comparisons. I mean, Texas is like another.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
The country in terms of its economy, and we just have to be cognizant of that. It's tough being next door to them, too, because we lose a lot of our folks over there.
Yep. So tell me about competing with South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama. Where are the opportunities for Louisiana, Mississippi? Where are the opportunities for us?
You know, I think it's diversifying our economy, the things that we've talked about. I mean, honestly, we've got to get our handle. I sound like a broken record. We talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, the insurance, the rates, that's a problem. We just have to admit that that is holding us back on some of these things. I think the other thing is, you know, we've still got these perceptions, even though we're making progress in areas like education, areas like crime, we are making progress. It is getting better, but we still have those perceptions out there that drive people away. And obviously the poverty, you know, all of those things, perception-wise, they're really killing us in so many ways. But, you know, I think if we do diversify our economy, we've got things that are positive for us. We do have some good tax reform that's been done. We do have a low cost of living. We do have a lot of other, you know, cultural and, you know, quality of life values here. Somehow we need to do a better job of marketing that to the people out of state. And also, I'd say we got to get a message to the kids, the students who are going to college right now in our state, that there are job opportunities for them here. They don't have to leave like they think they do.
How do you do that?
Well, you know, we just kicked off a task force this last week or so where we're trying to work with higher education to go reach students while they are still in their earlier years of college, freshman year, sophomore year, with kind of career counseling, that type of thing, to connect them with employers. Because we do have the jobs. Mm-hmm. Employers are looking for jobs. But I do think there's a perception among young people, and we heard it, you know, in the first task force meeting, that they have to go out of state. And even parents telling them, you need to go out of state for a job. Maybe you do, but if we can connect them with a good employer opportunity here first, at least they have that option. They know that they can stay if they want to.
As you talk about reputation and so forth, when it comes to the ethics legislation that passed in the last session, was that a step back or not when it comes to attracting industry, et cetera?
You know, we'll see on that. I mean, I definitely think it was a step back. We certainly didn't need to go that direction. I think we'll have to wait and see if there is some other bigger backlash in terms of that perception out there. I mean, look, we already live with the perception of that ethics, you know,
And the perception, Barry, for those that don't know, is, you know, every other place you go is bad. You got to grease palms, but Louisiana is just crazy. That was the reputation we had. I thought we were getting away from that, and now I don't know.
No, I think we did for a while. You certainly haven't seen that in the headline thing. You don't hear that same type of deal. Hopefully, you know, I think it was a step in the wrong direction. I wish we hadn't done it. But I hopefully that, you know, that's not going to be the next thing that drags us down with another weight that we don't need to have around our necks right now in terms of our economy or our economic job growth or whatever.
Thank you, Barry. Have a good weekend. Barry Irwin, Chief Policy Officer, Leaders for a Better Louisiana. We come back, we'll talk to Mike Haas, Voice of the Saints, get a training camp update right now. Time for WWL First News. So that we go to Eno's in. 7:42, 18 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, first day of August, and 9 days from now, Saints will be taking on the Chargers there in L.A. Mike Haas will be making a call of the game along with Deuce McAllister, Jeff Nowak on the sidelines, and I can't wait. We welcome in Mike Haas now, voice of the Saints. How you doing, Mike?
I am well, man. It's moving right along. August 1st, and game not too far away. Mm-hmm. It's coming.
It is. Let me tell you this. First of all, I had no idea you were as tall as Bobby Hebert. I knew you were tall, but I saw you interviewing him the other day on WWL.com, and y'all should go there because they got a lot of good content. I didn't realize you and Nakano were the same height.
Well, we're both getting shorter.
You'll never catch me. You'll never catch me, Mike.
Yeah, no, it's not the contest to catch you.
No, you'll never catch me. I guarantee you that. Because while you're shrinking, I can, like Louisiana, I continue to sink as well. So let's talk about, and look, I watch football a lot. My memory's not great because I have a lot of stuff coming in and coming out. But when it comes to Stutzman, Danny Stutzman, when the Saints drafted him, I even told Tim Zimmer this, I remember him playing against LSU, and I remember watching some Oklahoma games thinking, this guy can play. And I was excited to see the Saints draft him. And the only reason I mention that with my memory is a lot of people don't stand out, and I don't remember a lot. He stood out to me. And tell me about what he's been doing during a training camp and how he's been looking and your thoughts on him.
Very solid. You know,
maybe you should tell
athlete.
People who he is for people that, unlike me, that don't know who he is.
Hey, he's a linebacker from Oklahoma, number 47, and he's already had an interception. Just kind of, he's got great instincts. I think that's what they liked about him. Can get into coverage, but also has some speed and can stop the run. And he just kind of drifted back into coverage, and quarterback didn't really notice him too well. Made a nice pick, so. I agree. I think he's for where they drafted him, and I think he's going to get an opportunity. And I've said this before about kind of where this team is, that where they have veterans, mm-hmm. They're pretty pretty strong. If you just look at the safety position, and even with Tyrann Mathieu retiring, Justin Reed and Julian Blackman, and I'm not saying they're going to be the starters, but then you have young guys like Jonas Anker, who they drafted. So you have guys who are experienced and may be your starters and may not be, but you also have opportunity for a lot of these young guys because you need depth. You need so much depth because of injuries and just during a long season. So I think they're all going to get opportunities, and I think Stutzman is one of those guys. I mean, obviously we lived in a two linebacker world of DeMario Davis and Pete Werner, and I think we're going to see more three linebacker situations. So I think you're going to see more opportunities for guys like Danny Stutzman.
He seems like a guy, I know it's cliche to say it, but about just being a football player, where, as you said, he just reacts. He just knows instinctively what to do, and he's there and he's doing it.
Yeah, exactly. The Julian Blackman, who they signed the day after Tyrann Mathieu retired, it's first day of practice, and I'm watching this guy, and he's on the field, he's in the uniform, he can't know any of the schemes or plays or much of them, and I watch him, and he's kind of creeping up, and then he reads the run from the safety position, busts into the backfield, makes the tackle for a loss, and you're like, sometimes it's just football, right? Playing the game. And so I think, instinctively, a lot of them are doing that because it is a new defensive scheme. And so you're learning different ways to play. The linebackers are asked, and the defensive ends are more in coverage. It's a lot of one-on-one defense and offense from an offensive scheme. You're forced with a lot of one-on-ones defensively. You're in a lot of one-on-one, and everybody, has rave reviews about both the offensive scheme and defensive scheme.
I think it goes to vision because, Mike, as a collegiate golfer, sometimes you stand on a hole and it just lays out perfectly. You know exactly what you're supposed to do and where you're supposed to do it, right? Same thing when it comes to driving NASCAR. Drivers have said it lays out like a puzzle to them where they see this open and that open and they just instinctively know what to do. And I think it's probably the same way here. Since I mentioned golf, which has a lot to do with kicking the football, generally speaking, when it comes to power and accuracy and sports and athletics, even if it's golf, the advantage goes to the larger man. That's not the case as it relates to Blake Groupe, is it? Where does this guy get his power from?
Well, and I will say this, it's all leg speed. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of guys, golfers who are not massively big, you know, who they do it through club head speed.
Right.
Right. I mean, you guys are 6'5" and get out driven by a guy who's 6 foot, you know, 180 pounds.
Cause yeah, but the 5'5" guys rarely outdrive him, right?
Rarely, but still, it's about club head speed. It's about, you know, leg speed and accuracy. And more than, you know, with Blake, what Rizzi had told us, if you watch him, his kicking leg gets so far back. It comes from a position that I can only draw. I couldn't get my leg back to where he is. So he starts from a deep position, and then it's just leg speed. But quite frankly, what they're not worried about, Charlie Smith, they're, you know, 50-plus, they're not automatic. They don't say, hey, you got to make every 50-plus. You got to make it from 40 in. That needs to be 12 for 12.
Yeah, I think you got to take a step back, too, Mike, because if you're counting on 50-plus yard field goals, you got an offensive problem, right?
Right, but that's the game now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are more 50-plus field goals than ever in the game. Mm. But if you're 5 of 7, 50-plus, yeah, that's fine. It's 40 to 49. That is where you got to make your money. And Blake's been awesome this camp. Charlie Smith, you know, the international participation protocol player, that IPP, he has struggled from 40 to 49. And if you don't make 40 to 49, you're not going to make it in the NFL. And then how about the battle of punter, right? I mean, that just shows you where they feel this team, you know, struggled last year. Matthew Hayball was the incumbent. So they brought in James Burnip, and then they just signed another guy, Kai Kroger. So you have three punters, all of them from the SEC, by the way, Alabama, Vanderbilt, and South Carolina, battling for the punting position. So that, you know, the ability to flip the field or not flip the field, I think, you know, is high on their list of things to do, because Matthew Hayball led the NFL in punts inside the 20. Now, inside the 20 doesn't mean what it used to mean, but, you know, it's about the ability to flip the field, and I think they're looking for that guy.
That corner's gotten smaller, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
the 20. Now
to
it's
me,
a 10,
inside
seems
the 20,
like.
if you punt it 37 yards to the 19, I'm not saying about Hayball, but if you punt it 37 yards to the 19 and you get it inside the 20, and that is a good stat, I don't know. You just punted the 37 yards, you know, to the 19. Yeah. I feel like that we should start counting inside the 10.
It seems like, yes, it seems like it's directional inside the 10 and also fair catches right inside the 10.
Right.
Yeah. All right, let me take a break, Mike. We'll pick it up when we come back. Having done both at a mediocre level, it's amazing how similar, I can tell you, kicking the football and hitting the golf ball are. It's amazing how similar they are. 7:51, 9 till 8. More with Mike Haas when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. It is 7:55. Tommy Tucker talking to Mike Haas, voice of the Saints. They'll get it going next Sunday in Los Angeles against the Chargers. Kellen Moore, head coach. If I'm him, I'm telling Phil Galliano, the special teams coordinator, as it relates to Blake Groupie, don't tell him anything. Just leave him alone. Don't say a word. Just don't say anything. What you been seeing at quarterback, Mike?
Well, it's been kind of a feast or famine. You have to kind of, you know, all of them have had deep ball touchdowns, all of them. Now, I would say Spencer and Jake more so than Tyler, and all of them have had interceptions. And so you kind of find the balance there. I mean, I think Jake's had a very strong camp. I think Spencer has probably looked the most consistent.
Jake has had a very strong camp? Really?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I mean, they're all getting reps right now. And so, I mean, he's, you know, he's you know, the last, really since they've been in pads, you know, Jake didn't take part in the OTAs, but Spencer has probably looked the part the most. It feels like he's more decisive in his throws, where I feel like Tyler looks a little bit like Spencer did at this time last year. A rookie that half a beat maybe holds it a little too long. He feels like he takes the check down, the safer pass, you know, more than Spencer and Jake. But, you know, it's still early. But I feel like Spencer has kind of taking that next step, you know, after, you know, playing in the, you know, the first season, even though he didn't win, but he definitely played. And Jake's always been strong in camp. He was strong in camp last year. It was a big battle between him and Spencer. So we'll learn more.
It would seem, Mike, let me jump in for a second. It would seem to me like Kellen Moore would want Tyler Shough. Now's the time. If you're going to be aggressive with the football, now's the time to do it so we can break down the tape and show you, well, no, you should have done this or you shouldn't have done that, as opposed to always checking it down and not maybe taking a shot when he could have. Does that make sense to you or not?
It does, but if you know, and I'm not trying to get it in Tyler's head, but I'm going, if I'm a rookie, you know, am I going to throw it deep and get picked off, or do I take the completion, right? Do I take the soft, you know, the easier path? So I don't know. You know, he's young, not age wise, but he's young from an NFL standpoint, and he's learning. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a timing thing. And Spencer will tell you, he throws it faster and quicker now than he did last year. Spencer mm-hmm. needs to still learn to take a little bit off sometimes. Everything's not a bullet, mm-hmm. right, to a tight end doing a short out pattern. But I feel like Spencer, if they were going to play today, would probably be the guy.
How's now, the preseason? I was going to ask you, how's that likely to shake out next Sunday?
I'm not sure who will get the start. My guess is Spencer. The thing you have to do with both of these guys, because that's really the test, because they're not playing any other teams in practices. You're going to have to, in my humble opinion, you're going to have to play Spencer with your first team offensive line, and you're going to have to play Tyler with your first team offensive line at some point during this preseason. I don't know about Jake, but they'll all get significant time, a quarter, a half, in those three games. But this is those games, the first two, I think, are going to decide immensely who's going to be your starting quarterback. But I think right now if I were forced to say, I would say Spencer.
So if you got the Chargers on the 10th, the Jaguars on the 17th, you play the Broncos on the 23rd before opening with the Cardinals on the 7th, do you then play the starter against the Broncos? Because you're not talking about a seasoned vet here.
It depends. If you haven't made the decision yet, maybe, but I feel like you will have made that decision. So yeah. I think that starter will play some, but not that much.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it as always. Take it easy. Have a good day. Nice talking to you. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Leslie Harris and then Jason Williams. A lot coming up. Stay with us. Tommy Tucker, Friday Morning, WWL.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.